Good morning and welcome to WMNF's Midpoint, your midweek, mid-morning news and public affairs show, where we examine world and national news through a local perspective. I'm your host, Shelley Reback. Janet is away on vacation this week, so I'm happy to be here with my friend and guest co-host, Susan Smith. Welcome, Susan.
Thank you, Shelley. Glad to be here.
We have Patty Perkey running our board for us today, and Lamar is answering our phones. So if you have questions or comments, give us a call at 813-239-9663 or email us at dj@wmnf.org. This morning, we are going to talk about how you can change who gets elected to public office without ever having to change how someone votes. Yes, it's like magic. It's redistricting time again, the once every 10 years process by which politicians get to choose their voters instead of the other way around, with voters choosing their representatives, like we are always taught in civics class. Well, what do I mean? Let's review. The Constitution provides that once every 10 years, we conduct a census to determine how our population is distributed around the country. Then, based on those numbers, congressional and state legislative districts are drawn to allocate roughly equal numbers of people to each voting district. In theory, the apportionment of political power is supposed to be relatively equal between voting districts because they contain roughly equal numbers of people. But we all know that between theory and practice is a distance wide enough for the Ringling Brothers to set up a circus with clowns and acrobats, and that is generally what we get in the redistricting process as the Florida legislature embarks on its once-a-decade project to draw the new voting district lines on a map. Those lines, which will define state and congressional voting districts for the next 10 years, will be redrawn in the coming weeks and months. In fact, the process just got underway in Tallahassee this week with the first meeting of the Florida Senate Redistricting Committee. Locally, our counties are going through the same redistricting process based on the county's growth and changes in where people live now compared to where they were 10 years ago. Three proposed county redistricting maps are currently under consideration in Hillsborough County, and the public is invited to review them and comment on them in a series of public hearings, which you can find detailed on the county's website. Florida's population has grown by 2.7 million residents in the past 10 years. That means the state will get a new seat in the United States Congress, probably in the I-4 corridor in Central Florida, which is already a swing district in a toss-up state. With 28 members of Congress, Florida's partisan balance is critical to determining who controls the United States Congress, and where currently a five-seat shift nationally would give Republicans the majority. Northeast Florida is slated to get an additional seat in the state legislature. So these new lines will shape the congressional midterms as well as races in the state house and Senate, all of which will be on the ballot in November 2022. Now, strictly by the numbers, Florida's partisan divide between registered Republicans and Democrats is actually about 50-50. But don't assume that means equal representation by the red and the blue, because who gets to draw the districts can have a dramatic impact on the political landscape. In fact, the redistricting process has given us two decades of Republican rule in Tallahassee, as Republican legislators have sought to protect their turf through gerrymandering, which is drawing the lines in a way that can concentrate or dilute the influence of political parties in any given district. By rigging the voting district lines, only a small number of legislative incumbents were ever defeated or even challenged, and that is how the politicians can stay in office and pick their own voters instead of the other way around. Here to talk to us today about the process and what we, the public, should be doing about it are my guests. In the studio with me is Susan Smith, who's a longtime political activist and Tallahassee watcher. And on the phone with us is Ellen Frieden. Ellen was the campaign chair of the successful drive to amend the Florida Constitution in 2010 with fair district amendments to require new district lines to take into account county and municipal boundaries and geographic divisions, while also allowing for minority representation. Now chair of Fair Districts Now, Ellen is probably the foremost authority on redistricting in Florida, and we are very lucky to have her with us today. Welcome, Ellen. Are you with us?
I am. Thank you, Shelley. It's great to be here. And hi, Susan.
Hi, Ellen. Twice in 1 year we've talked. This is great.
A little later in our show, we will be joined by Jaleesa Giles, Communications Director of the Florida Conservation Voters, which is a coalition partner in Fair Districts Now. But let's start with Ellen. The political implications of redistricting are enormous, but the Fair District Amendments approved by voters in 2010 require that congressional and legislative districts be drawn without the gerrymandering aimed at favoring incumbents or favoring a particular political party. Don't these amendments that you worked so hard to see passed protect us now? What do we have to be afraid of now?
Well, the only thing we have to be afraid of is that the legislature won't actually follow the amendments. And we have good reason to be afraid because, in you know, these amendments passed and were in the Constitution in 2010. And it was 2012 when the last legislative and congressional redistricting occurred. And in that year, not only did they not follow the amendments, but they actually hatched a scheme to really pull the wool over the eyes of all Floridians. They had the legislative leadership had maps that were drawn in Republican Party headquarters by Republican operatives, and the maps obviously dramatically favored the Republican Party, which is gerrymandering 101. That's what they do. But so in 2012, when they drew these illegally drawn maps, we had to sue them, and we actually proved what they had done. And what they had done was draw these maps illegally in the first place, because now the Constitution says you cannot draw districts with the intent to favor a party or an incumbent, and they violated just about every provision. There are many other provisions, too, of the Fair Districts Amendment.
Now, I guess
so that's what we have to be afraid of this year. We have to make sure that they don't do that again.
And I guess one of the big things I would imagine that is cause for some concern is that in the circumstances you just described where you had to sue them, so which was the last big redistricting battle in Florida, this legal fight resulted in a decision by the Supreme Court, but that Supreme Court then had three justices that were named by a Democratic governor, and now Republicans control the Florida Supreme Court, which has, I think, seven justices, all appointed by Republican governors, including three by Ron DeSantis. So in 2010, at least, I know the court saved redistricting from being a complete disaster for Democrats. I guess we need to be somewhat concerned about the status of the court now, too.
Absolutely. But, you know, the court there's precedent from the last go round. And what we have to hope is that this court, even though they were appointed by, you know, from a different political party, will still follow the law. And the law was very clearly set out by the last round of redistricting and litigation by the previous justices. So that remains to be seen. We're hoping that they will follow the law.
So for people that aren't familiar with the process or that history, tell us what are the goals of Fair Districts Now for this cycle? What are we trying to ensure? What are we trying to see?
Well, Fair Districts Now was a successor to Fair Districts Florida. Fair Districts Florida was formed for the purpose of getting the Fair Districts Amendments in the Florida Constitution. And that required, as Susan well knows, that required gathering signatures. It first required drafting language that would work. It required gathering signatures and then running a campaign. Once the election on which the Fair District Amendments was on the ballot was on November 2nd, 2010. And on the night, well, on early in the morning of November 3rd, 2010, lawsuits started being filed to try and have the amendments held unconstitutional. And they were filed by members of Congress and the Florida legislature. They hated the idea of the Fair District Amendment. So once the lawsuits started being filed, we formed a separate organization for the purpose of making sure that the amendments, which were now on the ballot, were properly implemented. So that's the purpose of Fair District. That's the mission of Fair District. And that's what we'll be doing this cycle. We're watching the legislative process. We're monitoring it very closely. We are trying very hard to communicate with legislators about the process. The leaders of the legislature have refused to talk with us. We're hoping that that will change, but who knows?
Well, we're talking with Ellen Frieden, who's the chair of Fair Districts Now, which is a coalition of organizations seeking to ensure fairness in the redistricting process in Florida as the legislature begins drawing the maps for new voting districts, which is a project they're required to do every 10 years following the census. So what do you think, WMNF listeners? Do you think the process will be fair this time around? Are you concerned about your political representation changing in your district? Let us hear from you. If you have questions or comments on this issue, please give us a call at 813-239-9663 or email us at dj@wmnf.org. Ellen, so currently I think Republicans hold like a 78 to 42 seat dominance in the House, and they currently control the 40-member Senate with 24 seats. So Democrats, it seems like they face little chance of making dramatic gains in the legislature through redistricting. Do you see that as well, or do you see something else?
It's hard to know. I mean, we don't know what the maps that they're going to draw are. If they draw the maps fairly, you know, the numbers actually in the legislature were higher 2 years ago than they are today, the numbers of Democrats, I should say, in the legislature were higher than they are today. The Democrats haven't held control of the legislature since the mid-90s, but there was great improvement after the Fair District Amendments passed, and then came 2020, which was the Trump wave in Florida. And, of course, you know, generally when there's a when a Republican wins at the top of the ticket, that brings, you know, all the other races down, or Democratic chances down. So we don't know what's going to happen in coming elections. If the maps are drawn fairly and the seats are competitive, as they should be, once the maps are drawn following the Fair Districts Amendment, we very well could see change. Are we going to see Democrats take over the legislature? Probably not right away, but you never know.
Okay. Susan, what do you see?
Well, I want to ask Ellen to give us a little background on how they draw the maps to make them unfair. If you could talk a little bit about stacking and packing and how they carve out districts to give an advantage to one party over another.
Absolutely. Well, this is the history of gerrymandering. And I know gerrymandering is a tough word for a lot of people. They don't know what it is, but essentially gerrymandering is drawing districts to accomplish a particular political goal, to make sure that whoever is actually in charge of drawing the district continues to maintain their political power. And the people who draw the districts are the legislators, but if the whoever is in, you know, in leadership in the legislature is really who controls this. And obviously, as Shelley just mentioned, there aren't very many or there aren't nearly enough Democrats in the legislature to have any real strong voice in the way this is going to go. So Republicans will control it. So how do they do it? Well, first of all, their goal, again, is to create districts that are easily winnable for their party. But one way they can do that is by packing lots of Democrats, opposite party, into a small number of districts. So if you would look at a chart that would show you the numbers of Democrats in districts that are dominated or that are, you know, democratically drawn districts, and the number of Republicans, you would see that there are large numbers, high numbers of Democrats in just a few districts, maybe a third of the districts. But the other districts are all, the Republican advantage in those districts is much lower, and is it's just enough for them to be sure they're going to win. So they might put 60-70% Democrats in a district. Now, what does that do when the Republican districts are in the high 50s for Republicans? So what does that do? Well, obviously, if you're packing all the Democrats into just a few districts, it allows for Republican dominance because they can they win the other districts without really having to try very hard. But still, it silences Democratic voices in all those other districts.
Now, Ellen, let me ask you to clarify something. In a state like Florida, which has such enormous numbers of registered no-party affiliation voters as opposed to registered Republicans or registered Democrats, how do they know? I guess they must look at, like the last presidential race, how did Trump do among unaffiliated voters in a particular district to make a determination as to whether or not, there's Republicans here or there's Democrats here. It just seems to me that the process must be a little bit skewed because of the high numbers of NPAs.
Well, yeah, I mean, it isn't really. And because they don't look at voter registration, what they do look at is voter performance.
Mm.
So we, you know, in Florida, okay, even though we do have really high numbers, it's probably a third of the electorate at this point, of no party affiliates, we haven't had any independent or, you know, no party affiliate candidates who win. So in every election, those no-party affiliates have to vote for either a Republican or a Democrat. So they take an average of not only the presidential, but they'll look at previous governor's races or U.S. Senate races, statewide races, in order to determine what the electorate in a particular district is likely to do.
So, you know, one thing that I notice in preparing for this show is that in the past, the public has had, significant input into telling the legislators what they wanted to see in terms of the drawing of electoral maps. And in Hillsborough County, at least, where we're located, that process is going on now. And there are a series of public meetings already scheduled and available on the website, the county website, where the public can go and make their thoughts known about how the county commission districts should be drawn or redrawn. But yesterday, I believe, the Florida legislature, the chairman of the Senate redistricting committee, just promulgated a new set of rules that seems to take the public out of the process. It seems to be a pretty radical change. And Senator Rodriguez, who's the chair of the committee, said the Senate is considering abandoning public meetings to collect citizen input from communities across the state to hear how they would like the maps drawn. And he said, if you go back and look at the litigation from last cycle, the Florida Supreme Court was very clear that we're no longer allowed to use, quote, communities of interest, close air quotes, because that was not articulated in the Fair District Amendments. Rodriguez said during the first meeting of the Senate Reapportionment Committee, the Fair District Amendments to the state constitution prohibit legislators from drawing maps intended to protect incumbents or political parties. But Rodriguez said that the Supreme Court in Shelby versus Holder in 2013 removed the requirement that legislators do a, quote, traveling roadshow to determine which communities of interest want to be kept together in legislative and congressional districts. And now he questions whether public hearings even make sense in Florida. What do you think about that? It seems to me he's sort of perverting the intent of the Fair District Amendments. What do you think?
No, I don't think he is at all.
No?
Well, first of all, let me... The intent of the Fair District Amendments isn't relevant at this point. The wording of the Fair District Amendments is what's relevant. And the intent, obviously, was to eliminate partisan gerrymandering and racial gerrymandering, to tell you the truth. However, first of all, communities of interest are not, he's right, they're not considered in the Fair District Amendments. They're not mentioned in the Fair District Amendments. And in fact,
what does that mean, communities of interest, in the context?
That's a really good question, because communities of interest can mean just about anything. It could mean an ethnic group that lives in proximity to one another, but it also could mean yacht owners who live all along the intercoastal on both the east and west coast of Florida. So, you know, it has a very nebulous meaning, and that's why we didn't include communities of interest. Instead of communities of interest, what we require is geographical communities be kept together. So cities and counties have to be kept together, and districts have to be compact and not spread out for hundreds of miles as they used to before the Fair District Amendment.
Like with those wiggly lines on the map that we sometimes see.
Wiggly lines and all that, yeah. We used to have, there used to be a district that there are a couple of really crazy ones in Florida that, you know, are always listed on the, you know, the worst drawn districts in the world, you know, kind of thing. There was one that started in Jacksonville and wiggled its way all the way down to Orlando, and it would stop, and it was actually in some places it was no wider than a highway. It had to, in order to accomplish the political goal that they were trying to accomplish, that's what that district did. Then there was another one that had a population center in Palm Beach County and another population center in Lee County, which is Fort Myers. The districts have to be contiguous, and before Fair Districts, they also had to be contiguous. That means that the whole district has to touch each other. They can't have separate sections of, you know, that aren't touching. So what they did to make those two communities, those two areas touch, was they drew a very, very thin line that connected them. So it looked kind of like a barbell. And that line, which was only, you know, a few yards wide, went through the Everglades, through the bottom of Lake Okeechobee, and then over to the West Coast, where there were no roads connecting it at all. So if you wanted to travel within the district from one end to the other, you would have to go by car then an airboat, then a regular boat, and then...
So what we're trying to avoid.
Yeah. That's exactly what we're trying to avoid.
So yeah. I have a follow-up. You mentioned Shelby a while ago, the Shelby decision in 2013, and I know Chairman Rodriguez brought that up as a reason not to do hearings. Would the For the People Act, which is in Congress right now, help us at all? I know some of the provisions in the For the People Act having to do with gerrymandering are covered by fair districts, and I know that would only apply to congressional to make those maps fairer. But can you tell us how that might impact this the redistricting in Florida if we're able to get it passed in Congress?
Well, Shelby, you know, what Shelby said, well, I think that the context we were talking about Shelby was having public comment on the map. And in previous years, they have always had public hearings all around the state before redistricting. What Florida has always missed, however, was having comment on maps that actually were proposed. So in 2011, there were 29 public hearings all around the state, but they were kind of useless because, quite frankly, they didn't show any maps that the legislators didn't show any maps that they were considering. So what are the people supposed to do? You know, people did come in and say, we want you to follow the Fair District Amendment, or we want you to keep this area along with that area close together. But that is
so. You think Senator Rodriguez's plan is okay then?
No.
Oh, okay.
I'm saying not at all.
But you think that the public hearing removal of public hearings is something that we can live with?
I don't think that at all.
Oh,
I think that it was inappropriate about last time, and what's terribly inappropriate this time is that people should have the opportunity to comment on the draft maps that the legislature is considering passing. So when the legislative committees have done their work and they've come up with a map that they're going to submit to the entire legislature on the floor of the legislature, that's when they should have
public. Oh, okay. Well, that clarifies it. We're talking to Ellen Frieden from Fair Districts Now about redistricting. We have an email I'd like to read from Jim Devaney, who says, "No, I do not think Republicans will redraw the districts fairly. Mitch and Donald have shown through their actions that they will do anything to win. What they forget or ignore is that compromise is needed to ensure a democratic republic that represents the majority and not just for a few. Our governor won only by 0.04%, yet acts as if everybody voted for him." That's from one of our listeners. I do have a guest joining us. Is she on, Patty?
Yes.
Jaleesa, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Thank you for your patience. We have Jaleesa Giles with us. Jaleesa is the Communications Director and Deputy Director for Civic Engagement of Florida Conservation Voters. And Florida Conservation Voters, I understand, is a coalition member of Fair Districts Now. Tell us, Jaleesa, why has Florida Conservation Voters joined this coalition?
Well, our whole entire mission is to elect lawmakers to protect our environment and healthy communities for everyone. So a way to ensure this is that they cut the map fairly, that they follow the Fair District Amendments, and we hold them accountable to do so.
Okay. And how is it that you think that that fair districts will promote a more environment-friendly politics?
I guess it's because when people have the ability to vote, when they are in their own communities and they have the same type of values and they care about their environment, they care about the climate, they care about all of these things, and if they have the voice and they're keeping their communities together, then their power is stronger. And I think that way we'll be able to actually get things done, because if you cut them incorrectly and you cut up these communities, then you're taking their voice away. Then the people are not electing their lawmakers. The lawmakers are picking their voters.
So what is Florida Conservation Voters doing to promote the fair redistricting process?
So So we're doing two things. One is that we are, of course, holding text banks and trying to get our members to send the Fair District Pledge to their lawmakers. But we also are doing some local redistricting workshops in District 1 here in Miami-Dade. This is when we're trying to educate people on the redistricting process. We're trying to do public outreach so people can come to the committee meetings, as well as getting their stories, because that's what's important, right? Making sure that people say what makes their community important. Why shouldn't there be three different districts in on the same street like it was in 2010? So for us, it's all about public education, getting people to tell their stories, and also getting them to send these emails to their lawmakers to make sure that they are following the Fair District Amendment.
So can I get back to the reason? I think I said the We the People Act. I think it's the For the People Act. In Florida, we have such bad leadership that I think we have to keep looking to the federal government to save us. And I think this For the People Act would help us with redistricting, at least at the congressional level, if we can get it passed. Of course, that would require doing away with the filibuster. But is that a place we should be putting our efforts also into getting that passed, so it takes care of some of the gerrymandering that we see in Florida?
Of course. So we are part of the League of National, the National League of Conservation Voters. So we have it, we have conservation voters here in Florida, but we also have it in other different states, and it's a national organization. And we are doing that. We're pushing the For the People Act because you are right. We kind of have to look to the federal government to hold our state officials accountable and make sure that they do the right thing. But yes, both of them are a huge push and are important.
Thank you.
So I just want to pop in here because I think you asked me that question earlier and I didn't have a chance to answer it. But the answer is on the federal voting rights, whatever it's called, we don't yet know exactly what's in it. But my understanding is that there is a requirement for public comment to be made before and after maps are drawn. And that's actually really, really good and appropriate. Some of the Fair Districts provisions are in that bill, and we're very hopeful that it passes. If it does, it's going to be very helpful to in Florida to make challenges to the maps if they don't comply with the Fair District Amendment or the federal law.
One other thing I noticed about these new rules that Senator Rodriguez is promoting, as of yesterday anyway, was that no maps drawn by or submitted by members of the public will be considered unless a senator specifically requests that map in writing from, I guess, a member of the public or an organization, a public organization. I wonder how is that going to work? I mean, it sounds like in Congress, when a senator can blue slip a nominee for a judgeship or something, they can basically put the kibosh on the whole thing just by themselves. If no Florida senators are making these requests of public organizations or public experts, then we won't have any maps submitted by the public.
Well, this is a difficult subject, but I will tell you why he's doing that. Because in 2012, what the scheme, remember I mentioned that there was a scam that was pulled by the legislative leadership. What they did was they had fake members of the public submitting the maps that had actually been drawn by the Republican operatives. So what he's saying now is really a reaction to that. He's trying to make it look like there's no way that that could happen again. Because if a senator would have to take responsibility for those maps, and then the senator, obviously, if they're fake maps that have been drawn by Republican operatives and that's discovered, then the senator is going to be to blame. So,
that's helpful to understand. I appreciate that explanation.
Senators, if they genuinely know a constituent or they have investigated and they believe that a constituent is a real constituent who has drawn some sort of a map that they want to submit, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And frankly, I must tell you that with you know, one thing the Fair District Amendments did do was make it a little more difficult to draw maps. It's a very, very complicated thing to do.
I understand that there's a contest at University of Florida for political science students to draw maps fairly, for example. We have a listener, DeMarco, who writes, shouldn't legislators have to show the public draft maps to cooperate with Florida's sunshine laws?
You know, disgracefully, I should say, the legislature has adopted both a statute and a rule that says that anything having to do with redistricting is exempted from the public records laws. So we don't have sunshine laws that protect us, and that's one of the things that the Fair Districts Coalition has been demanding from the legislature, is that they open up the process and that they don't follow that, and that they make the, or they repeal those laws and that rule, so that redistricting documents should be part of the process, including all the communications, like one senator writing to the chairman of the committee saying, gee, I want my district to include that section. Again, as Jalissa said, voters should be selecting their representatives. Representatives should not be selecting their voters.
Aren't the new rules, don't they require that all the communications received by the committees and the senators on redistricting be preserved at least now?
Well, it's not a rule.
Okay.
It was a request that he made.
Okay.
And what he said is that, and what he's thinking is in 2012, after all the litigation that it happened in 2015 or probably 2015, when we asked the legislature to provide us with all of their internal communications, they admitted in open court that they had destroyed everything, and they looked terrible for doing that. And so what he's telling them today is, if there's a lawsuit, please keep these documents so we don't look bad again.
Right. Jalissa, you're still with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Thanks for being with us. Tell us, if people want to learn more about what Florida conservation voters are doing regarding redistricting or anything else for that matter, where can they find that information?
They can find it at fcvoters.org. We also have a community districting text bank that's happening tonight at 7 o'clock, so you can always hop into that and help us out with holding these legislators accountable.
And that will be on the website?
Yes, so the information is on the website, but it will also be on our Facebook, which is Florida Conservation Voters Education Fund.
Okay, I'm going to let you off, Jalissa. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
WMNF, you are listening to Midpoint, and today's guest is Ellen Frieden from Fair Districts Now, which is a coalition of organizations working to promote fair redistricting in Florida, which takes place every 10 years. If you would like to join the conversation, give us a call at 813-239-9663 or send us an email at dj@wmnf.org. I'm going to take a call from John, who's been very patient. John, you're on the air with us.
Hey, thanks for the show. I had an idea for drawing a fair map in the state of Florida here, that you'd make each district pretty much in percentage-wise of what the state recognizes as their party. So if you go to the state website, I think they have, like, they recognize the major parties, the Republicans, the Democrats, the non-affiliated, and then they have the minor parties. So it's like pretty much even. It's like 36, 36, and then 26 for the no party affiliation, and like 2% for the minors. So if you drew every district that would mirror that, I think that would be a really fair district.
Well, that would not reflect the geographic continuity that Ellen has been talking about is so necessary to make sure that people's representatives actually represent them.
Well, I would think somewhere in the rural areas it might be a little bit harder because it might lean more towards the Republicans, but I think more in the urban areas, well, the urban areas might be more Democrat, but that would be one thing my concern would be. You might have one of those snaked out gerrymandering looking districts when you do that way, but I thought that would be more, at least voter-wise, even though it's not geographically, you know, wise, it would be more fair, because that way you'd have a fair race. Or I guess if you can't do it really because of geographic, try to do that as best you can with each one, and then the ones that are unrealistic with the geographic consequences, you'd have to do that in a different way.
All right. Well, thank you, John. Thanks for that suggestion. Appreciate your calling in. I don't know, Ellen. It seems like that would be less likely to promote competitiveness in districts. It would be more likely to promote the status quo.
It's problematic because it would certainly promote less competitiveness, but it also would be pretty much impossible to do and keep districts compact.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, because certain people live in certain parts of the state.
Right.
And so to try and get a district that where there could be a Democratic majority, say, in Southwest Florida, that is so highly Republican, you would have to have a humongous district that would make no sense.
Right.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, thanks anyway for the thought. Let's talk to Ron from Mango, Florida. Ron, you're on the air.
Well, good morning, and thanks for the conversation. I had a twofold question. One was, has anybody looked into the fact that they move a lot of prisons and jails to rural areas, and then when they populate them, they count the population as...
Oh, that is such a good point, Ron. Thank you for reminding me of that. Yeah, Ellen, what about that? We have the issue here where they count the population, not the voters, for purposes of redistricting. So some of these rural counties, like near Arcadia and other places where there are large prisons, have a outsized influence on the political process.
That's exactly right, and it's very unfair. And Senator Rodriguez mentioned that yesterday, and basically said we're not doing that. We're gonna count the prisoners where they are in prison. So
Wait a minute. So wait. So you're saying they're going to continue to do what they've been doing?
Yes.
Count them where they are in prison.
Count them in where the prisons are.
So that means that those rural counties will continue to have kind of an outsized influence on the political process.
And it diminishes the influence of the places where those prisoners lived before they went to prison.
Right. And where they're presumably going back to, going home to. Ron, thank you for that question. That was an excellent question.
Also, have they thought about the single-member districting? I had an uncle propose the single-member districting years ago.
I know that, isn't St. Pete, St. Pete City Council is a weird animal. Every district votes single-member districts in the primary, but then citywide gets to vote on every district in the general, which is kind of a weird thing. I don't think the redistricting process itself has to do with whether or not the districts are single-member or citywide or countywide.
Well, it does, actually. Interestingly, the Constitution of Florida still allows for multi-member districts. However, there have not been multi-member districts for many decades. So single-member districts are the rule. They will continue to be the rule. As far as legislative and congressional districts, like St. Pete or...
Right. Local municipalities can have different rules.
They can do it. They are not bound by the Florida Constitution or by the Fair District Amendment.
So all right.
They pretty much do what they want.
I want to bring in Wendy March. Wendy, you with us? Wendy?
Yes, I am.
Okay, great. I want to bring in Wendy because Wendy is the political columnist for the Tampa Bay Times, and he's going to talk to us about what's happening with local redistricting. Give us a little overview of that, Wendy.
Well, there are a couple of fairly important situations going on right now in terms of redistricting in the Tampa Bay area. One is the Hillsborough County Commissioners are headed for what looks like a contentious redistricting for the four district county commission seats in Hillsborough. And the other is probably the other biggest local story on districting is what will happen to the Southern Pinellas County congressional seat now held by Charlie Crist.
Yeah, what is happening with Charlie Crist's seat? Apparently his district is too small in terms of population.
Has to grow some in order to, his district has to grow some in order to meet the rough number of residents that each of the districts will have to have under redistricting. Now, the district is already a swing district. Charlie Crist won re-election in that district last year by only 5 points. So it wouldn't take much. And, of course, he was running against Anna Paulina Luna, a first-time candidate who was not as well-known. So it might not take much to nudge that district more Republican. And it's generally expected by political insiders that trying to flip that district red will be the number one priority of the Florida legislature, the Republicans in the legislature, as they seek to redraw congressional districts. That's the way they could flip a Democratic seat Republican.
Wow, so presumably what they would want to do is send more Democrats into Kathy Castor's district, which is adjacent to it.
Well, they might not.
And maybe grab some Republicans from Northern Pinellas.
They might not have to do that because Crist's district has to get larger. That gives them a perfect rationale to extend the boundary of the district northward, which would extend it into somewhat more Republican areas. Now, extending Castor's district across the bay, it used to cross the bay.
Right.
And that was outlawed by the Supreme Court after the last redistricting. But extending that district back across the bay to take some of the Democrats out of Crist's district is also a possibility, but it would be somewhat more complicated. And the fact that Crist's district has to expand might offer the Republicans a simpler alternative as to how to Republicanize that district.
Just by taking voters from the north?
Just by moving the boundaries north a bit, you'd get it into somewhat more Republican voting areas.
Okay. So you Pinellas people, South Pinellas people and North Pinellas people, you have a great deal of, you should be taking a great deal of interest in what's happening in the redistricting process, given the priority of redistricting your congressional district. And of course, anybody who cares about national politics should care about that, because with the shift in a district going from Democrat to Republican, now all of a sudden we're no longer at 50-50 in the Congress, and it could have enormous implications for everyone nationwide. Ellen, what do you think about that? Is Wendy's projection likely?
I can't say what's likely, but it sure is what everybody's saying.
Mm-hmm.
Wendy is not alone in his thinking here.
Okay.
I think it's kind of a logical move.
Right.
However, I would like to say that you have to remember that districts can't be drawn with intent to favor a party or an incumbent. Well, there's no incumbent in that district now.
Yeah, but, sure, sure. But, wink, wink, but, nudge, nudge. All right. Well, Wendy, before I let you go, tell us about what's happening at the Hillsborough County Commission, because we have a big redistricting project going on there as well, and it seems it's getting a little testy.
It is getting testy, and there's also a pretty complicated situation there. The Democrats, of course, have a 5-2 majority on the Board of Commissioners, and the commissioners themselves will decide their district lines. One of their priorities is going to be to reshape District 1, where Harry Cohen now holds that seat. And again, that's very much a swing district. Harry just very narrowly won it last year over a little-known Republican challenger.
A little-known Republican challenger who had never voted before he entered the race and voted for himself. Never voted before. Scott Levinson, right?
I haven't reported on that. I think you're probably correct. Anyway, but I can't say that. I haven't researched.
Okay.
The other issue, probably the biggest other issue, is the Northeastern District 2 that's currently held by Ken Hagan. Now, Hagan has been just a lock for re-election for years on the county commission, but last year he got a surprisingly strong challenge from a comparatively little-known Democrat named Angela Birdsong. She might run again, and just a few small tweaks in the shape of that district could make it even more friendly for a Democrat. So there's a possibility that Hagan could face a serious challenge depending on how his district ends up being shaped. But there's a lot of controversy over some of the changes that have been proposed in a map proposed by Pat Kemp, Democrat and chairman of the commission. A lot of controversy among Democrats over some of the changes she has proposed that would have a tendency to make Hagan's district more friendly to a Democrat. So there's some internal dissension among Democrats on that score, and one of the issues is that any change in Ken Hagan's district will also affect District 3, which is the minority access district, the only district to have elected a black commissioner for years. So any changes to Hagan's district will also affect the minority access district, and that means it's going to be kind of a difficult knot for the Democrats to untie.
Yeah, in fact, Gwen Myers, who currently holds that District 3 commission seat, has herself proposed a map. A redistricting map. There are three, apparently, being reviewed at these public hearings, three maps.
Right. There are some conflicts among Democrats over Myers's map, which does what a lot of black political insiders want done in District 3, and on the other hand, Kemp's map, which would make District 2 more friendly for a Democrat to challenge Ken Hagan.
Hmm. So there's a lot going on, and if you're interested in the local redistricting scene, try to attend one of these public hearings that are noticed on, I believe, on the County Commission website, and take a look at that. Wendy, thank you for being with us today to talk redistricting on the local level. I want to turn back to Ellen for a minute, and Ellen, if people are interested in the process, where should they go and what should they look at right now? As we sum up here?
Well, they should be, number one, following the hearings on the legislature's hearings, and there is one today for the for the House Redistricting Committee. So that's one thing. Go to fairdistrictnow.org, and you will see the latest, all the latest articles and what Fair Districts is about, what the amendments are about. So that's fairdistrictsnow.org.
All right. Thank you so much for being with us today. We really appreciate having you with us and talking to us about redistricting.
It was my pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, let me throw in one last thing here. FloridaChannel.org. Watch the hearings. I'm not sure if they're available other places. Watch the hearings. That's where you can see them. And get involved and pay attention, people.
All right. I want to thank Patty Perkey for running our board for us and Lamar for answering our phones. Susan, thank you for being with me today.
Thanks for having me.
And Ellen, hopefully we'll speak to you again at the end of the process. Thanks for being with us today. You're listening to Midpoint on WMNF Tampa. Stay tuned for Talking Animals with Duncan Strauss next. We'll see you next week.